Today, we are joined by Dr. Daniel Matterson. When Daniel was working as a radiographer in the University of Edinburgh, he was a really good sport and volunteered to be an MRI test case. But there was a plot twist. They discovered a lesion on Daniel's brain, leading to a confirmed multiple sclerosis diagnosis. Fueled by this, Daniel decided to change his career, go back and study, and become a doctor instead. He is now finding his way through his own diagnosis, sharing his experience and being a light for others. Now, it is important for me to say, this episode is not medical advice, even though Daniel is a doctor. He is not yours. It's not medical advice for me either. This is a personal opinion and conversation. So should you require medical opinion, please do so with your medical practitioner. Now, as we get started, we all know the right bit of inspiration can completely transform someone's life. So please share the Talk Healing to Me podcast with just one person so you think they might benefit. Now, Daniel, it is so great to see you. You're very welcome. How are you doing?
Thank you very much for having me. I'm very well. How are you?
Yeah, great. Thanks. Oh, great. Well, look, Daniel, as I mentioned in your intro there, you had your own MS diagnosis and it was quite a few years ago now. Why don't you take us back to that moment? What was it like for you? And talk us through the emotions that you were dealing with.
So I'll go back to the beginning. I qualified as a radiographer in 2013, and I quickly, about a year later, I moved to Edinburgh and I was pursuing neurological research. So basically I did the head scans, the MRI scans, as part of the studies we were doing. I was then invited to be ironically, the healthy volunteer for the pilot study we were doing. So obviously I hopped on the scanner, quite excited. I was going to get a picture of my brain and all that jazz. Unfortunately, the scan picked up a lesion, and this triggered quite a few events that led to me going to see the neurologist, and ultimately a diagnosis of multiple sclerosis followed. Following on from that came bouts of depression. It was very hard to deal with, obviously, and you know, I imagine that most people with any chronic condition go through this kind of trauma. However, fast forward about a year and a half, I started studying at medical school, and here I am. So, yeah, it's been a long road.
I know, like, the fact that you are medically trained and you were in another career as a radiographer, which is already, you know, already a hard thing to study for, to then have a diagnosis and to change the trajectory of your career based on that. Talk to us a little bit more about that. Talk to us the reasoning behind it.
Yeah, so obviously MS came uninvited and completely derailed my life. I'd moved to Edinburgh with the thought of setting up a new life. That was very short-lived. So my kind of ambition, or my motivation more like, to get involved in medicine was to ultimately one day get hands-on with the disease itself and tackle it head-on, as I said, you know.
What do you see in the medical, you know, model right now and how it treats chronic illness? Because you've got the benefit of, I say benefit, I don't mean that to sound, you know, having MS is not a benefit. However, having the benefit of a medical training and then having a diagnosis, it means that you can approach and support in a very different way than most. What do you see is missing from how we currently treat multiple sclerosis and chronic illness?
I think the biggest thing is the personal approach to chronic illness. Obviously, anybody in this position, it's a lifelong condition. You're going to live with this forever. And it's nice to be treated on a personal level. So, for example, sadly, the way that the hospital kind of works is, you know, you'll go in for a head scan in my case. You'll get your bloods, you'll see your nurse, and then you'll have a follow-up in a year with your consultant. And it's just not very... it doesn't seem as personal as I would like. I mean, for me, the benefit of kind of being the patient and the doctor, I suppose, is that when I'm treating patients, I've got the insight to hopefully put the patient at ease and ask the questions that I would like to be asked. So just simply like, how are you? Have you got any concerns? Anything you'd like to talk about regarding your condition? And just things that, you know, I've had very nice comments from several patients just by simply asking these questions. And I just think having that little bit more of a personal approach would make such a difference. But obviously, you know, we've got an overwhelmed health service, we've got a lot of financial constraints, and it's obviously not that straightforward, unfortunately.
I know, and it is. Look, we are really privileged to have access to medical attention in certainly in this part of the world. And, you know, I know in the UK, obviously, it's a free service. And in Ireland, it's not free necessarily, but even having access to experts. I know, like, of course, in the USA, it's like medical attention and medical treatment is a whole other ball game. What would you say to someone who's really struggling with the diagnosis?
I really struggled for a long time, years. There's people to talk to. I didn't really appreciate that. The sad thing was, when I was diagnosed, going from a able-bodied person to technically disabled overnight was quite a shock to me. And I did admittedly feel quite ashamed. And that is quite a sad thing to say, but I'm just being open about this. So I concealed my diagnosis from a lot of people. And I can say now that that is not the way to be. It led me down a very dark path. And, you know, bouts of depression. I would find myself drinking more than I normally would. And simply by talking to people, I think that would have been a lot better. And that's why today I'm trying to encourage that kind of approach to living with chronic illness. Again, that's the take-home message for me. Absolutely, don't bottle it in, talk about it, and it makes such a difference. And you're absolutely not totally alone. You're not alone at all. That's the thing. There's so many people in the same boat. Just by reaching out, you will find these people.
Yeah, of course. And a brilliant, brilliant sentiment. And, you know, I've had clients that have come to me and nobody knows. I've worked with celebrities and, you know, nobody knows. Nobody would know that. Yeah, and they're in very much in the public eye. And I believe and I can see that it makes a difference and people are open about it, because I do think it requires an extra energy and a fatigue to actually keep that concealed. You know, from that energetic point of view, you know, if you have to constantly lie about something, I don't mean somebody's gone out of their way to lie, but to conceal it, that takes an immense amount of energy to do that. And actually, just to say, in the show notes, you'll see a link to our Facebook group. Come and join the free Facebook group. You'll see some lives. Might even be a Q&A with Dr. Daniel, but make sure you come in there and know that you're not alone. So really, really great message there. Tell me this, from dealing with it personally, and thanks for sharing so openly about, you know, dealing with depression. You mentioned, you know, the word shame around that, and I can absolutely relate to it. You know, coming from your training and seeing how people present with different types of symptoms, different types of background, different types of stress levels and presentations. Sometimes I get people come to me and they say, oh my God, I feel like it's my fault. I feel like it's my fault. I should have done this. I should have been healthier in the past. Whatever, they're beating themselves up because they've had this diagnosis. What would you say to someone like that? And on the flip side of that, do you think there's a way to prevent MS?
For the first part of your question, I don't think anybody should feel guilty about having MS. I used to go to the gym. I mean, I still train like as much as I can. I would go to the gym daily. I would go running. You know, I did everything perfectly. I've never smoked. I, you know, eat healthy, and I ended up with MS. There's no link in my family to MS. It's a bit of a mystery how it's happened, but it happened, and I don't blame myself, and neither should you. It's just one of those things. In terms of preventing MS, it's hard to say. So there's a lot of theories as to why MS comes about. So there's the recently, there was a study published with a couple of million people in, a very good study, that linked the Epstein-Barr virus to the onset of multiple sclerosis. So looking at it that way, certainly, you know, that's if this link is what it's perceived to be, which nobody's actually sure. I just feel that there's more out there that we could be doing. Again, completely personal view, but something that to consider, I suppose.
Hugely so. I mean, we look at everything from EMF frequencies in the program to, you know, chemicals in your shampoos. And sometimes, honestly, it can be really overwhelming. And it can get to a point where it's like, you know what? I will put up with these in order to balance out being really stressed, trying to do everything perfectly and to live this monastic lifestyle. Sometimes you've got to weigh up the good, the bad. And it leads me on to another question, because I do get people coming a lot to me saying, oh, give me the diet and the exercise that you did to reverse symptoms and to shrink lesions and things like that. And it's usually the last thing that I go to because I believe that it's really important that somebody's stress levels and their mindset is nurtured and cared for first before bringing in any changes. And, you know, you mentioned about being diagnosed and it is, you know, mentally, that's where you deal with it first, you know, and that's what we've got to live with all the time. Tell me, how did you get yourself from a place of being, I'm going to say the word scared, I don't know if that's what it was, but certainly being confronted by the diagnosis and dealing with depression. How did you get from that to being in a place now where you seem really at ease and settled and on top of your health?
Well, it didn't happen overnight. In fact, I was in my third year of medical school before I told everybody that that was actually the case. I'd hidden it from everybody. As you said earlier, it is exhausting. Making excuses as to why you can't go places and do things, and, you know, it is tiring. And that adds to the mental torture. I think going forward from my diagnosis, what I found was it's nowhere to live. I was just constantly in a depressed state, and I wasn't doing anything to tackle it. And my fiance, Leona, she put up with a lot. And she ultimately helped me get out of that, which I'm eternally grateful for. But I think for me, it was just trying to get back to normal life, living and actually enjoy getting out of bed. There has been, admittedly, some days when you just don't want to get out of bed. I'm making it sound really easy, and it wasn't, but I just made that choice that I can't live like this anymore. And I forced myself to do things, you know, get active and change my diet, just things that I know are healthy for the body. And obviously support's a big thing. And ultimately, I told more people and it becomes a lot easier to deal with it. And this is the big thing I'm saying. If you conceal it, you're not sharing any of the burden that you're carrying. And it is very heavy, you know, and it gets heavier.
Agreed. Yeah. I also think it robs people of the opportunity to be a contribution to you.
Yeah. Totally, 100%.
Yeah, because there are people that do want to help. And sometimes that feeling of vulnerability, because first of all, to even recognize that, okay, how I'm living doesn't work or how I'm living, I'm not happy with. To be able to recognize that first is something. To be able to then actually verbalize it for yourself is another thing. But then to be able to say it to somebody else takes an immense amount of courage and vulnerability to do that. So really well done on, you know, third year of medical school and going through that. I'd say that was an interesting time in your life.
It was a scary time.
Exactly. Well, you know what? I had lots of questions from my community, from the podcast listeners. So thank you for those, everyone that sent them in. So the first one is, why do doctors not approach diet as much as medication as a tool for recovery?
So I think that's something that we're leaning more towards now. So a big example is, you know, we're trying to, you've probably seen campaigns like to reduce levels of obesity, to prevent things like diabetes, rather than just treat diabetes. I do think that, and well, actually saying that, it's hard when it's something like multiple sclerosis and we don't actually know how to prevent it. But I do agree that that is certainly the way forward. And should we one day find the reason that MS develops, I think that's probably the way it will go. Mm. Unfortunately, right now, it's not really an option.
Yeah. And, you know, we were chatting about this earlier on. It's, you know, doctors are not trained as nutritional therapists.
No.
You know, it's a whole other specialized training and testing and all of that too. So it is hard. And I think it's idealistic and I think it would be great. However, you know, with timing and lists and everything else, you know, and it's also important to note, and I say this with absolute love and respect for doctors, I believe that you can go to your doctor, you can get your advice, you can get your medication if that's your choice as well. And then it's up to you to go and to do that research yourself. And that's good news and bad news. It's good news because it's like, okay, I can actually go and affect change or transformation here. And it's also bad news. It's like, shit, I have to do it myself.
Of course. I can remember following my diagnosis, my first treatment I went on, and I got given about 4 or 5 books, all different drugs. And it was basically read these and tell us what you want to go on. So for somebody to walk away who's just been diagnosed, essentially, to have to make that decision, you're pulling your hair out. What's the best? You're looking at the side effects, and there's so many things. And sometimes it is nice to have a doctor to sit with you and go through it. But again, it's just how it's done, I suppose, at the moment. But it's not particularly helpful, I don't think. I didn't find it helpful that I was just given kind of free rein, pick a drug and take it. But
yeah, I was different. I was prescribed, I think, a beta interferon injection, and I got a yellow bucket for the injection things. I was told that a nurse would come out to me, which they did. I was trained on how to inject myself, and it was like, off you go. Yeah. It was off. I used to like lock the door of my kitchen so the kids wouldn't come in, and I'd be flicking the syringe and then going, shit, there's a bubble in it. Like, is that going to affect me? And then that's to, put the needle in. And I'd sit there crying because I knew, well, for me personally, I had side effects that weren't so pleasant. I didn't on other medications, but it's an interesting time straight after diagnosis because you are dealing with the mental side of things and you've got the symptoms, and then it's like
certainly
taking on this side of things too. Yeah. Let me go into the next question. And actually, it's perfect what you just said. So somebody on Instagram said, and they're on Copaxone nearly 3 years, so tired of injections. Any alternatives on the horizon that you know of?
I know that there's obviously different medications are for different. So you've got like your first line, which is your beta interferons. I think we were actually on the same drug by the sounds of it when I first started. So you've got your injectables. There's oral pills to take. I currently get an infusion now. So I'm on a drug called Tysabri, which is a very good drug. I'm actually, touch wood, haven't had a single symptom, and it's probably been about 8 months now. So that's great.
Amazing. Congrats.
But this is obviously something that I would advise to speak to your neurologist about, because obviously I can't tell you to change medication. And I think that obviously they know a lot more about you as a person and why you're on this drug. And obviously if it's working, why change it? I think that's the thing. All drugs work differently. And obviously when I picked my first one, so the ideal thing for me was it was once weekly injections. So I knew if I was taking a pill every day, I would forget. Inevitably, I would forget.
Imagine being a female and trying to take contraception, Daniel.
Tell me about it. Yeah.
I could not get that in. You may have it so easy.
I actually had this conversation with Leona when I started. Imagine if I was on pills and not, I couldn't do it. But, sometimes I'd find, so I used to inject on a Friday because I used to get quite a few like adverse symptoms, and I knew the weekend followed. So if I felt ill, I'd had 2 days to recover. So, that's another thing about talking. So I have altered hours at work because of having MS. So that's another reason why talking to people is a very, very important aspect of having any chronic illness, not just MS. Because obviously, as you know, the fatigue is immense. So that, I don't work long days. I don't work nights, not because I don't want to, but because physically, I'd be on the sick before I knew it. So it's good to have these things in place. And the more you keep to yourself, the harder it is to get these things to help,
So I couldn't agree with you more. The next question we have is from Sandra, who's in the USA. And she says, how important are MRIs if you're not on MS meds? And how bad is the contrast dye?
So the thing is, and take me as a prime example, you can have lesions on your brain and no symptoms. So what this basically is telling you that there are attacks happening, albeit not bad enough to cause a symptom. That doesn't mean that you're not accruing damage. And I'm not preaching to be a neurologist here. I'm just saying that I personally believe, an MRI scan will pick up information whether or not you're having symptoms. So if you've got disease activity, that will find it. So yes, I would say that they are very important. Okay, so gadolinium. So I have heard of reports of there being particles getting lodged in the brain tissue and things like that. How true this is, I don't actually know. I've read these. I personally get gadolinium when I get a scan, and this is never anything that has concerned me. So I hope that kind of answers your question. I use it.
Sometimes, when I have clients that are coming through my program and they're going out for dinner, or they say, oh, I can't go out for dinner because I can't eat this, or maybe I might not eat that. I'm like, go have the dinner.
Of course.
Go have the dinner and enjoy yourself, because if you're being miserable and you're not doing it, or if there's a particular outcome that you want and you're like depriving yourself of all the joy, or depriving, like, you can't live like that.
Well,
you can, but it's not much of an existence, really. So I think the both sides of the coin need to be balanced. And I think it's the same with the contrast area. If you're really keen on having, you know, an up-to-date result on what your MRIs look like, and contrast eye is the way to go, I wouldn't be refusing it.
Yeah.
It actually brings us on to our next question perfectly. So this is from Melissa, who's also in the States. She's just back from holidays as well, so she might be in the holiday vibe. She says, does red wine have any benefits for an MS patient?
Well, it's full of antioxidants, so I could... I drink red wine. I don't think it's got any benefits. I don't think it's got any negatives. Again, personal opinion. Drinking in general, obviously, it's not great for anybody. But I don't think in small doses, in sensible amounts, it's going to cause any major problems as far as multiple sclerosis goes. It was actually one of the questions I asked when I was diagnosed, because I was about 21, 22 at the time. And the first question I asked was, can I still drink? Because obviously at that age, all my friends are going out, and that's obviously priority number one at that age. And my neurologist at that time didn't tell me, no, stay in. So I've always went out, and as long as you're sensible, I've never had any problems. So from a personal experience, my answer there would be just drink the wine. Again, as well, we talked about mental health. You've just said, if you're going to withhold all the things you enjoy, that's not great for your mental health as well. A lot of living with a chronic condition is managing both the physical and the mental side. So again, there's a balance. And if you can not tip it too much to one side, but just have a halfy half, so sensible, and have your days where you let loose a little bit. But that's what I do, and that's what I would recommend, because we all need to have a life as well, don't we?
Brilliant. I like that. You could have half for a laugh. You have the half measures. Although she is going to Jamaica shortly as well. So she mentioned that she might be drinking rum then too. So Melissa, whoa. I'm gonna pop in a question there before I move on to the next listener. You mentioned there about, you know, being 21 and, you know, going out with your friends and being really important. And obviously life changed, and changed in a lot of ways, from your career to many other things. What in your life has become better because of your MS diagnosis, if anything?
Firstly, I've pursued a career that I otherwise would never have thought was possible. So what I'm trying to say is I kind of got a viewpoint of just go for it, do it. Where before I was a bit more hesitant, now I'm just like, you know, life's already thrown this at you. Just enjoy your life and go for your dreams. That kind of approach is so important. I appreciate a lot more as well. You know, I've had days where I've struggled to walk. So the days when I can actually get up and move around and stuff, you appreciate these things. And, you know, I used to take this for granted. And I just think that having that appreciation gives you such a different outlook on life in general.
I couldn't agree more. Thank you for sharing that. It's very profound. The next question. This comes from Leona. Leona says she has chronic back pain and her walking is not great when she's stressed. Is there anything you'd recommend she can do?
GP, first of all, go and see your GP. They could refer you to physio, give you exercises to do, obviously analgesia, pain medication, just to help with that as well. That's probably where I'd start. And obviously the GP is in a much better place to refer you on to the relevant professional. I'd always start with the GP because they've got access to so many services. If it's MS related, I'd obviously take it straight to your MS nurse. Is this an MS related issue, or is this just in general?
Yeah, no MS related issue.
So I suppose bringing it up with your MS nurse is a big thing, because I know that there's neurophysios as well, and they'd be more tailored to tackling those kind of problems.
Yeah. So I'd probably We have a neurophysio on our faculty. She's magic.
Yeah.
We have like three different sets of 5 minutes of particular strategic movements around mobility and flexibility, and they do make a massive difference when someone actually does it consistently.
Of course.
But yeah, really cool. Tell me this, what are your tips for keeping in remission?
So what's worked for me, I focus a lot on health, whether that's diet, keeping active, keeping hydrated, just your simple things that you would look at. I think, what can I do to improve my health? So I avoid, for example, all artificial foods, as we've said. I would much rather put sugar in my body than a synthetic chemical that's been made in a laboratory somewhere. I think my body knows what to do with that, as opposed to the chemical, which may actually influence the disease itself. Who knows? Keep active. Being active is one of the best things you can do. It's good for your physical health. It's good for your mental health. Both of those things play a role in our well-being. I know that having poor mental health can ultimately lead to stress, lead to relapse itself, you know? I mean, I relapsed in medical school during my exams purely due to stress. So anything you can do to keep stress levels down is perfect. So just maintain a balanced lifestyle. And I mean that in terms of health, diet, etc., etc.
Yeah, brilliant. Really, really great. And actually, if anybody does want to take a look at those five pillars of health that we work with in the Success the MS formula, feel free. There's a free masterclass on ms2success.com. Feel free to go and have a listen to that. And if it can be of any help. Also, I'm going to share Daniel's details at the end of this. But we are going to get into the quick fire round in just a moment. Are you ready, Daniel, for 10 quick fire questions?
I am ready.
Okay. You said that reluctantly. I'll be kind. So number one, if you followed your childhood dream, what would you be doing now?
Astronaut.
Nice. Number two, what advice would you give to your younger self?
Pursue your dreams. Don't let a setback hold you back.
Great advice. Number three, who inspires you most?
So a lot of people inspire me. One person who inspires me a lot is Dwayne The Rock Johnson. I think the guy is just incredible. Another person who inspires me in a different way is Leona, my fiance, as I previously mentioned. So what I mean by this, you know, she sees the good days, she sees the bad days, you know, she sees all the things behind closed doors when I'm not feeling great, and she puts up with a lot. So I'm eternally grateful for that. And hopefully when she hears this, she'll be happy. But no, I think it's not just me, the illness affects, it's everybody around you. And I think she takes a lot of the load. So I think it's important to recognize that, you know?
Yeah, good on you. I hope Leona listens to this now and
gets
the acknowledgement. Yeah, you're definitely going to be playing this for now. Very cool. Number four, was there a particularly dark day that turned into a positive, and what was the lesson?
So I had to be jumping on the scanner. That was a scary day, followed by a scary year. Obviously, where I am now compared to where I am then, I would say the lesson is just don't let this consume your life. You know, there's still a lot to live for and there's still a lot to give. And I didn't see that initially. And talking from experience, almost 8 years of this now, there is a lot to live for. And I am living a life now that I never thought I would live 8 years ago.
Amazing, amazing. Okay. Number five, what does your ideal date consist of?
So I've been on a lot of movie nights lately. So I'm a meal, a movie, a glass of wine, preferably Star Wars. I'm quite into Star Wars at the moment. So
who's your favourite character?
Oh, Obi-Wan. I've just watched the series. It's amazing.
Without hesitation. I love it.
Yeah.
Does Leona like it though?
I'm like easing her into it, you know. She wasn't a fan, but I think she's slightly turning towards it, you know.
Also said another way, she's putting up with it.
pretty much, yeah.
Maybe it's grown on her. Very cool. So number six, speaking of movie nights and nice dinners and glasses of wine, if you had a roast dinner, so say it was roast potatoes, carrots, and say a nut loaf, I know you're vegetarian, or some kind of protein and some stuffing, do you eat your favourite thing first, your favourite thing last, or a little bit of everything together?
Okay, so yeah, I'll tackle the boring stuff first. And you've got to leave the highlight till last. Otherwise, you've got nothing to look forward to. Nobody wants to finish on a sprout, do they?
Listen, I find this fascinating. So I'm gonna drill you a little bit on this. So you'd eat your carrots and your sprouts separately, and then move on to your, say, your roasties, and then so you eat everything separately in one go.
Yeah, and I'd probably decide at the time if I'm more into the carrots or the sprouts to want to go further upstairs.
So you don't have a little bit of everything together on your fork.
No.
That's very methodical. Is that a doctor thing?
I always done it. It's really strange.
I love that. I love that. I was saying to you, right, like I have to have a little bit of everything together in even ratios and have the last bite, like a bit of everything, like the salty bits and the crispy bits together.
You've got to finish on a high, haven't you? Otherwise it's...
Absolutely. Know. But that's so funny. I'd love to be sitting having dinner with you and Leona someday and watching you eat. Just the side eye, having a look.
I'm pretty sure she feels the same, but she's never said it to me.
You've got to ask her and let me know. I love it. Number 7. If you had to choose 3 people to join you for dinner, whether they're dead or alive, who would they be?
Okay, well, given what I've just said about inspiring me, I'd have to say The Rock, Muhammad Ali, and Stephen Hawkins. I think there'd be a lot to gain from that table. And I probably wouldn't add a lot to that.
Listen,
but no, that'd be, yeah.
I'd happily be a fly on the wall for that conversation. How very cool. Number 8, favourite song?
I got my dad to thank for this. Led Zeppelin, Kashmir is a great song. I'm quite into Foo Fighters at the moment as well.
Nice.
So, it's a few to choose from.
There is.
Pretender's always a good one, isn't it?
Nice.
I'll get
good
you going.
Good choice. At number 9, the book that you gift the most?
Can't Hurt Me by David Goggins.
Nice. Yeah, he's a beast, yeah. Isn't he?
He is a beast.
Absolute beast.
It's a very inspiring book.
Mm. Yeah, really cool. Number 10, how do you switch off?
I do a lot of spinning. So I bought a spinning bike. When the pandemic hit, I had to shield. So I was locked in the house for about, I think it was about 6 months. So having that bike just to have a bit of escapism. So obviously the gyms were shut, you know. So I had nothing to do other than spin. At this point, I was in medical school and the gyms are the universities are shut as well. Everything had shut, as we know. So I literally woke up for 6 months with nothing to do. It sounds great now, actually, when I say it. But so yeah, having that bike just to have a goal, a bit of escapism, it was fantastic. And again, it goes back into the physical health and the mental health. I think it all brought it together.
Yeah.
It was great.
And do you have one where you can see like the route, or is it just purely spinning?
No, it's just purely spinning. I haven't advanced to that stage yet, but I will get there.
Nice. There's all these fancy Peloton things. And then I've seen the ones that you can pick like a country and a route and all the rest that you can choose where you're going. And I think it's real. I think it's like to scale as well that you can do,
which is really cool.
Yeah.
I've heard of them. Some gyms have them as well, all the fancy gyms, they've got them.
Yeah.
But no, I've never actually been in one.
I'll pass on the name of them to you. Daniel, you've been an absolute gem of a guest. Thank you for coming on. Thank you for doing what you're doing and sharing so openly with us. I've learned some stuff inside of this conversation too. So thank you. There's a bunch of ways to connect with Daniel, and we'll link all of these in the show notes. You can follow him on Instagram, which you're going to give us your handle now, Daniel.
So it's the MS Doctor, separated with full stops. So the.ms.doctor.
Brilliant. And again, all of it will be in the show notes. You can click there. Thank you so much for listening to the Talk Healing to Me podcast. We'll see you again soon, Daniel.
No, not a problem. Thank you so much for having me. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to today's episode of Talk Healing to Me, Stories for Women with MS. Now, if you want to get some tailored advice on your health that takes into account your lifestyle, your time and your energy and focus, I invite you to go to karendwyer.com and take the quiz. It's super simple. It's 3 minutes. You'll answer about 25 questions. And what you'll get based on your answers is an 18-page report of practical things that you can bring into your life. I would love for you to let me know how you get on. And you can DM me on Instagram at @IamKarenDwyer, or you can email me at hello@karendwyer.com. Let me know your score. And if there's any other ways I can be of support, I would be delighted to do so. Talk to you on the next episode.